Welcome, brave listeners, to Wilhelm Presents Frightening Tales. It's Friday, and that means a new story. Please tune into FrighteningTales.com for more scary stories. Today's tale comes straight from the North Pole. No, it's not like that, but it does involve red. I call it the Red Snow, written by yours truly. Let's begin.
And in international news, British delegates are in talks with the Prime Minister of Canada in hopes of moving Allied troops into the North Pole. With reports of Russian submarines performing recon missions in the far north, many interested parties are looking to get a foothold there. The U.S. Geological Surveys estimate that the Arctic may hold more than a trillion cubic feet of natural gas and 90 billion barrels of oil, equaling 30% of the world's undiscovered gas and 13% of undiscovered oil. These resources will be increasingly recoverable and transportable because of the fabled Northwest Passage, once frozen throughout most of the year, and navigable only by the most powerful icebreakers, is thawing. An ice-free Northwest Passage could cut shipping routes between Europe and Asia by 3,000 to 4,000 miles. In 2001, Russia brazenly laid claim to almost half the Arctic Circle in all of the North Pole. During a 2007 expedition, Russia planted its flag under the ice there, while, meanwhile, in the...
Commanding officer in the room. The three men in the room snapped to attention and saluted the man standing in the doorway. At ease, gentlemen. What are today's reports? He asked.
Everything is still fine, sir, answered a young soldier. All sensors in the zones Epsilon and Zeta are clear. The same in Eta, Theta, and Iota, sir. But the signals from Kappa and further north, they're all gone, sir.
As they have been, soldier. As they have been.
Do you think the Russians are going to the North Pole, sir? The soldier asked.
I've been at this post a long while, and there is a reason those sensors continue to go offline. And there is a reason only the local indigenous people can put the new sensors that far north. It is the same reason the Prime Minister is not allowing the Brits to go up there. And it's the reason none of our military bases cross that perimeter. If the Russians, in their ambitious maneuvers for power, want to jump into a spider's web, then they'll just find out what it means to meet the spider, won't they? Replied the commander. Keep me informed if anything changes, and pray it doesn't.
Yes, sir, but... Sir... What's up there?
Many of the men are speculating of some kind of prehistoric polar bear or something. The officer looked at the soldier for a moment and then spoke.
Lieutenant, I've never actually laid eyes on whatever it is.
But no soldier that crossed those boundaries has... returned. The only sign there is anything, well, is that. He gestured at the plate of tank steel with long, rough furrows cut through it, mounted on the wall. After our last sortie into the north disappeared, we were approached by a tribal leader who passed that to us, and with it a message. That this is what will happen to anyone that trespasses. loud, sharp crack echoed in the frozen air. And then another, and another, as the weight of Russian steel pressed against the surface, till it gave way, releasing the U-boat from the sea below. Its conning tower stands like an alien monument in the frozen wastes of the Arctic. The access hatch on the tower hissed, breaking its seal, and swung open, freeing the soldiers within. With a practiced cadence, the men went about pulling crates and containers into the snow and ice. Lieutenant Petrov, you and your team will recon a 200-meter perimeter. Lieutenant Alexander will oversee base camp. I want our systems up and running within the hour, commanded an officer. And the men saluted and set about their duties. The Arctic was under its midnight sun, 24 hours of light. But the harsh winds kicked up all the fresh powder that reflected the sunlight so brightly there was no difference between the sky and the land. Everything was just white, and so bright it burned your eyes to look at it. Those foolish enough to not have protective lenses on felt the sting of their tears freezing to their face. The blowing snow was so intense. A man only a few steps from you was invisible. The howling winds made it nearly impossible to even hear the crunch of footsteps in the snow. The land was nearly flat, and nothing obstructed or slowed the winds here. It was only the fiercest of creatures that made this place their home, and quickly evident that humans had no business in the north. Within the hour, the crew of the submarine had set up thick canvas tents with inflatable insulating walls. The snow on the ground was cleared away to polished ice, then covered with metal grating whose barbed teeth bit into the ice, holding the plates in place. Thick insulated cables ran from the conning tower to the assortment of tents, an umbilical of power from the nuclear reactor on board. A few men were erecting a modular tower for communications. A command tent housed computer equipment and data started to populate screens on their location, the outside temperature, weather statistics, and that there was no air traffic anywhere near them. A skeleton crew remained outside, whereas most crew members remained at their stations aboard the sub. Every 12 minutes, the patrols were to check in. It was quickly evident that there was nothing but empty white of blinding sunlight reflected off a billion tiny snowflake mirrors suspended in a biting wind. The teams couldn't get more than 50 meters from the camp before they were blind or lost. When this happened, they radioed back to camp, and crew members there would trigger a speaker on their newly raised communications tower. This tone would guide the patrol back to camp. When they got close, they would shout out, "Patrol, here!" To which their reply would be followed, "Patrol, resume." And the cycle would repeat. Patrol 3 was lost for the 15th time when the young soldier lifted his radio to call for a tone and paused. Staring out into the white, he could swear he heard it. Just then, in the wind, faint. He waited and listened to see if he'd hear it again, or if it was a trick of the wind. He heard it again, but it was distant.
He looked to his teammate.
Did you hear that? Someone is out there.
The other soldier gestured. He couldn't hear very well, and shrugged. The soldier holding the radio held it up to his face.
Patrol 3 to base. Are there any other patrols out near us?
The radio crackled a reply.
Patrol 3, we're in a triadic formation. Team 1 and 2 should be nowhere near you. This is base camp to Patrol 1 and 2. Sound off. Over.
There was a great pause, and then the radio crackled.
Patrol 1 checking in. Over.
The base camp ordered again.
Patrol 2, report in. Over.
And again, the ever-present sound of wind was all that was heard. This time, the two soldiers heard it.
Patrol!
Patrol 3 to base. We're gonna go check out whatever this is. I think we can hear Patrol 2. The two soldiers marched forward away from the base into the white.
Patrol 2! Shouted the Russian soldier. Where are you?
Patrol 2!
Then after a pause,
Patrol!
And they took more steps into the white. It was then the second soldier grabbed the sleeve of the first and tugged hard, falling into the snow. The second soldier swung around to look at the first, who was motioning in front of him, where in the white of the nothing around them was a spot of red.
This is base camp to Patrol 3. Report in. Over.
This is base camp to Patrol 2. Report in. Over.
This is base camp to Patrol 1. Report in. Over.
Patrol 1 to base camp. We're here, but we're not sure where here is. Can we get a tone? Over.
But there was no tone. There was no sound other than the wind.
Patrol 1 to base camp. We need a tone. We're lost out here. Over.
Patrol 1, this is base camp. Please stand by.
The wind was picking up outside, and you could hear it, muffled as it was, though, through the tent and the radio headphones. The other two men in the room monitoring their machines, the mechanical functions of which were barely audible in this oppressive howl of the wind. It was a number of minutes before the flap on the tent burst open, and then a soldier who had run out to see about the tone for Patrol 1 came hurtling through the opening, frantic and panicked. He fought with the enclosure and then fell into the room.
Lieutenant, what is going on? What is the meaning of this?
There's no longer a tower out there. And the rest of the camp has been pulled apart. It's as though something with great powerful claws just tore through it all. The other tents, they're in tatters. And there's no personnel anywhere, and there's no one out there. It's just blood. So much blood. It's everywhere.
Base camp to Patrol 1.
Come in over.
I told you. There's something out there. Something big. You should have seen it. The tower pylons. They were just severed.
Panic and fear was in the lieutenant's voice.
Base camp to tower. Come in, tower.
This is tower to base camp. We read you over.
Tower, we have reason to believe base camp has been compromised. Do you have any information pertaining to the whereabouts of the personnel out there? An eyewitness here says that something has killed all of our troops and left the facilities in tatters. I can only confirm that none of the patrols are answering hails. Please advise. Over.
All of the soldiers in the room were stopped now and focused on the conversation with the crew still on board the submarine.
Suddenly, a sound louder than the wind, shrill and metallic, filled the air. Its tone fluctuated and pitched, a ghastly sound of rended steel that stopped as soon as it began, then followed by another, just as suddenly, and another after that.
Tower, this is base camp. Can you confirm what that sound was? Over.
Base camp, this is tower. We are still gathering information. Please stand by.
But the radio didn't cut off, and the men in the room could hear what was happening on board the submarine.
Did something hit us?
A voice further in the room asked. The distant sound of screams could be heard coming from the radio, and the men in the room were beginning to panic.
Something's in the ship,
came a shout.
Seal the room! Seal the room!
Another man cried, and there was a clunk of a heavy metal hatch. Everyone in the base tent flinched when the warning alarm sounded. Its siren-like alternating tones echoed over the frozen wastes.
Base camp to tower, what's going on? Over.
But the line was quiet. No reply from the submarine came. The man, sitting at the station monitoring weather, stood up with a start, panic in his eyes. He looked at the other two men in the room, his heart rate noticeably elevated, and his breathing quick.
We're not safe out here. We need to be in the submarine.
He bumped into his station, knocking loose items onto the floor, and then he backed away and ran for the door.
You don't want to go out there. Everything's destroyed,
the young lieutenant spoke up. But his words fell on deaf ears, and before anyone could stop him, the door flaps were fluttering against a bitter cold, and the man was gone. The lieutenant rushed to the door and zipped up the flaps.
He won't last long.
Nah, not out there. There was a sudden shudder, as if the ground beneath them lurched. All at once, everything that was plugged in surged forward, a foot or more, as something pulled on all their cords, and the power in the tent flickered and went out. Then it was dark, save for a few machines on their own battery power.
Then panic shouts were heard at the side of the tent. Let me in! Let me in! Let me in! The sub is gone! It's just gone! Let me in!
You could see something was padding along the sides of the tent where the shouts came from, looking for the door.
No! No! No, no, no! Stay back! No!
That turned into shrill, gut-wrenching screams cut short by a bright tear in the tent and a blast of cold air. We could hear the wet sound of it eating the man outside. We didn't need to see to know that it was easily pulling the meat that made up that technician apart, like one might eat a sandwich. The way it was happening so fast was a testament to the creature. It crunched the bones, and then it was just the sound of the wind again. The soldier on the radio slowly approached the hole flapping in the tent, still holding the radio in his hand.
All he could see was white. And then he looked down and saw the distinct shock of red in the snow, dark and saturated. It was everywhere. Then he saw it, bent over, lapping at the snow. Its head was a light gray bone with a massive crown of antlers that could challenge a moose. Its skull-like face had deep, empty sockets, and for its size, it looked like it was starving, its bones evidently pushing at the taut skin. It must stand at least 15 feet tall, its arms sinewy muscle and overly long, ending in 5 thin claws. It was difficult to see its legs. It seemed to be surrounded by a pillar of snow, partially obfuscating it, only a few feet away. Just then it turned its head and looked at the tent. The radio technician froze, holding his breath. It rose and seemed to see through the tent inside. Then it turned, and the snow seemed to swallow it. They patched up the tent with whatever they could, mostly bandages from a first aid kit. The temperature was dropping without the generators to provide power. They would need to outthink their problem if they were to survive. They opened whatever supplies were in the room and started to take stock of what they had. There were only a few loose ration packs as the crew returned in shifts to sleep and eat on the submarine. There were a few more med packs and then the tables. Some unpowered servers and computer equipment connected to 2 utility power supplies for power outages. There were no chairs. The tables were tall for standing at. The lieutenant spoke up first. Is there a way to get the radio connected to the power supplies? The technician replied, if we could get part of the antenna and connect it to the power, we may get out a short message, but we'd have no way of knowing if it was received or if anyone was coming to help. It's more than we have now, said the lieutenant. So, how do we do this? Well, we go outside. The canvas tent flaps unzipped with a masterful stealth. The 3 men peered into the blinding light of the north. It's forward about 8 meters to the next enclosure, then left till we see the fallen comm tower. Is it out there? They sat there, still, trying to make out anything in the blinding white. A wall of wind-blown snow howled past the tent. Hoisting up the 2 power supplies, the lieutenant looked at the other 2 men and, with a nod, bolted out into oblivion. The radio tech looked at the other man, then gave the same nod and turned to follow the lieutenant. But not one step in front of him, he stared into the empty bone sockets of the great menacing beast that they just watched devour their colleagues. It filled the doorway of the tent with its imposing size and with a deft motion hoisted the man off of his feet. But not by grasping him so much as skewering him with each of its bony digits. Immediately the other man in the room ran for the wall, clawing at the fabric to get out. The lieutenant pulled his feet through the deep powder, clearing the last of the snow from the wiring harness terminal at the side of the fallen comm tower. He'd connected the 2 power supplies, which brought the console to life. He just needed the radio tech to log in and send a message. He stopped dead in his tracks with trained immediacy. Turning his head back to where he guessed he'd come from, he could have sworn he heard something. A scream? He strained to listen, willing the sound into his ear. And then the sound came. Clear, distant, but clear.
Patrol here.
Thank you, brave listeners, for being daring enough to make it this far through another frightening tale. You've been listening to The Red Snow, written by Mark Wilhelm. If you're as attached to FrighteningTales.com as I am, why not show your support with one of our new shirts available through the website's mercantile services? Send in a photo of you in your creepy wear and we'll happily share it on the site. Oh, and do tune in again next Friday for another frightening tale. If you're brave enough.